and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today I'm sharing a presentation that Josh Olsiewicz and I did while we were in D.C. for Blockchain D.C. There will be a video on YouTube somewhere. I'll link it up in a playlist or maybe just post it on my own channel if you want to see the video version. But this is a presentation that we did on trading crypto in both bull and bear markets. We chatted to an audience of people that were mostly traders, but we approached it from the beginner to intermediate level. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. It was fun to meet Josh in person and to hang out with some people there at a crypto event. If you want to see another event, there's a YouTube video where I did a crash course in TA, mixing TA with fundamental analysis and how to have proper risk management in crypto, including sharing some of my own faults, some bad trades that I've made over time, and how I could have made better trades, and to just try to be open and share my own experiences. So it's two things that I hope you'll check out from live events. Hey, you know, this episode is brought to you by The Ocean. Go to ledgerstatus.com/TheOcean. The app is in beta. You can trade on it in beta if you signed up for the airdrop, like I'd have shared multiple times on this podcast. There are Ocean tokens that are going out over basically right now, if you're listening to this. They just passed the deadline for signing up for the airdrop, and the app is about to launch on the 15th. It's going to be great. I'm looking at a live version of it right now while it's in beta. It's waiting on all of you to go and trade and to enjoy wallet-to-wallet trading on a zero-custody decentralized exchange application. I think you're going to love it. Go to ledgerstatus.com/TheOcean to check that out. And here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and I'm joined by one of the most prominent technical traders and analysts in the space, Josh Olsiewicz. Josh is a trader, and he is also an analyst through Brave New Coin. If y'all have ever read bravenewcoin.com and Bitcoin price analysis or price analysis for pretty much any of the other large cap cryptocurrencies, he's probably the guy that wrote it. And I learned a great deal of the crypto space from Josh. My personal background is more in open source software, and I got into trading equities as a 15-year-old, which is 15 to 17 years ago. So I've been in the equities markets for a long time with interest, but the crypto space is a whole new journey. So I took some of the things that I'd learned over the years and then flipped it all upside down and learned a great deal from Josh over the course of last year. So we're happy to be here to do a live version of what we do on my podcast called LedgerCast. You can go to ledgerstatus.com to check that out and subscribe and all that stuff. And about once a month, Josh and I talk about the state of the market. Hey, Josh.
That's right. How's it going?
It's good. It's good to see you.
So just a quick background on me. I've been in Bitcoin since 2013. I knew nothing about finance, nothing about economics, nothing about cryptography, nothing about anything. Self-taught completely. Kind of like a retail trader who made it from the ground up. And I think that gives me sort of a unique perspective that I don't have any of that baggage of legacy markets that some people do, which can be a good or bad thing.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about trading from a technical perspective, and we'll discuss fundamentals, of course. But both of us make our entries and exits primarily on a technical basis, meaning looking at a chart. And so we're going to discuss some of those concepts. And appropriately, as I'm sure many of you know from looking at your own cryptocurrency portfolios, there are both bull and bear markets. And sometimes being able to trade both sides of that can be quite beneficial to your profit and loss calculations. So Josh, why don't you start us with just the general idea of what it means to make a technically based trade?
Sure. So how many people here have bought or sold The IRS is not watching, don't worry. How many people have bought or sold anything in crypto in the past year? Okay, good. So the question always becomes, like, why do you buy or sell? Where are you buy or sell? Is it something on CNBC that you saw? Is it an Andreas video that you saw on YouTube? Is it some sort of metric from the network? What is it? For me, I've always found that strictly using the chart has always been the best thing I can do. So what I like to do is find trends. So is there a trend, yes or no? And then go from there. In my head, it's just a bunch of decision trees with limbs that snake me across. So what the smart people do is they sell on the way up and they buy on the way down, which sounds easy, but a lot of people use counter logic and emotion, panic, fear gets in the way. FOMO, fear of missing out. So things, when they're on the way up, people want to buy. When they're on the way down, they want to sell, which is sort of counter to smart investing or intelligent trading, whatever you want to call it.
And in the crypto space, that has actually worked during the big runs, because you could FOMO in, or fear of missing out. You could FOMO in when something had doubled, and what we saw was things going 10 times or even 100 times a baseline price. In a traditional market, that's just not what happens, but there's an extremely low liquidity, and it's an inefficient market, meaning that some of these extraordinary moves were possible, so bad decisions were often rewarded. But as the market evolves, then applying a more technical basis for why you're entering an exit is going to be even more important.
Sure. So for me, I always need, let me first partition like what I do in, as far as my portfolio. So I have a buy and hold thing where it's like 25 to 50% of what I own. And then the other 25 to 50% is actively traded, which means you're going long or you're going short. You're buying or you're selling. Then a certain percentage of that can be on margin, depending on if you're a U.S. citizen or not, and you have access to certain exchanges. So certain percentages of that sort of determine how I enter, exit, or get stopped out, which is when the trade goes the opposite direction of the direction you think it's going to go in, using various technical indicators.
Who here, to extend our poll, everybody seems to have essentially done some degree of trading. Who's using any sort of chart analysis when they're doing that versus information-based that's like news or some sort of fundamental understanding? Who's using charts at all? Okay, so probably like 20% of the people that were trading. So the chart is basically just giving you additional information to make decisions. I always like to say that a chart is human psychology, and all your news-based events just depicted in a graph. So it's not necessarily that it's just, you know, technical analysis, and that's all there is. Although there are a lot of true believers that say the chart is the chart and the chart's all that matters. But most of the chart representations are because of some fundamental event. But Josh has theories about fundamental events.
Sure. So I'm a technical maximalist. So if I was on a desert island receiving no information but just the chart, that would be fine for me. I think the wisdom of crowds, or you know, insider information on certain things, it happens in all markets, unfortunately. But the crowd knows. You know, we can look at things like the GBTC pair for which is part of the DCG Digital Currency Group. It's pink slips, similar to ETF type thing. It's not anything close to an ETF, but the point is, there's a large premium for that product currently. As we're getting closer to ETF approval or denial season, we're seeing that premium shrink. So why is that happening? Are people expecting an ETF approval? Are they just hedging? Are they realizing it's too expensive? You know, that's happening before any announcement on some random Thursday at 5 p.m. that an ETF is approved or denied.
And all of those events, whether it's when Bitfinex was hacked a couple of years ago, those are depicted on the chart. So, like,
but you can usually also find some technical basis for why did it stop dumping when it did. So it found support. It found a zone where people were willing to buy, and that portion of it especially is very technical. Or, you know, just last night, this will be a little dated for podcast listeners, but there was what I would say is old news that hit the market of the Winklevoss ETF being denied. It got denied, what, like 2 years ago?
March 10th, last year.
Scars.
No, it was denied. They appealed. It got out of denial. It was basically a zombie ETF that was in limbo. And then they finally announced yesterday
that on CNBC.
That the appeal was denied.
And this is in the midst of the CBOE ETF applications, which are completely different. So the news of that being denied has nothing to do with the rumors or whatever you want to say, the good chances of the CBOE ETF being approved sometime in the next year. But the market still reacts to some degree to that news. So there was a $500 price drop, and we were walking down the street going to a restaurant. I was like, talking to Josh about whether this was going to be a real move or not, even though the news was not necessarily real. But there were technical basis for why it may only drop the $500. Or you could estimate that you'll find buyers maybe between 8,100 and 7,800, and you find support somewhere in those ranges. And technical analysis is what's going to give you the opportunity to say that I may feel confident buying the dip on something like this versus panic selling once it gets outside of some zone and you're holding spot, and then it bounces right after you sell and you feel bad about yourself.
Sure. My general rule of thumb is unless it affects the protocol, which virtually nothing ever has ever, everything's going to be okay. You know, there's no need to be upset. It's going to either bounce the next day, the next week, the next year, whatever happens, or, you know, it's going to go back to equilibrium. On the daily, it actually hit this random line called the 200-day exponential moving average, which is like a litmus test for legacy and markets, many investors, of if it's above the 200 daily moving average, it's bullish. If it's below, it's bearish.
And the reason for that is 200 trading days in a year in a traditional legacy market that's not 7 days a week. So therefore, that means it's essentially net positive versus the last year of trading on active days. So therefore, it gives you a bullish bias or bullish sentiment. So when you go under that 200 day, then that's often the definition of what a bear market would be. Or you, in legacy markets, it may be a 20% move off the top would be a bear market. Well, in crypto, that could be like 2 days of weird news coming out, and it's just like this mega spike, and then instantly reacts back positively. So that's what I was talking about earlier when I said I had to take everything I understood about what a drawdown meant or what an expected positive move meant and just throw it out the window because of the extreme volatility in the crypto markets.
Sure. And even in 2017, there's a point where TA will only take you so far with targets and entries and exits and whatever. So, you know, if you're in buy the dip mode, you're doing that. But otherwise, you're doing what's called letting the runners run, which is buying and seeing where it goes. You're selling at certain targets, sure, but, you know, you're smart. You're trying to be smart and take profit. You're not necessarily trying to be a hero and buy the bottom exactly, sell the top exactly. That gets a lot of people in trouble.
Last year, there were, in my mind, two extremely different and distinct camps. So the majority of people that were holding crypto, say, January and February, we've lost a lot of these poor souls that have exited the markets. But say January and February, most of those people had gotten in sometime in 2017, myself included. And every month was like exponentially devastating to have not been in the prior month because of the strength of the move. People that had been in the market a long time, we broke the prior all-time high. So the old bubble, remember, like everybody was talking about 2013, 2014, was 1,300 or so. Well, when we broke 1,300 again, that was when the big push really began from a technical perspective. And there's ways that you can calculate, here's the expected move off that, and we just obliterated every single one. So people that had been in the market for a long time, I have an interview coming out with someone that was in this scenario, they were starting to sell heavily, say at 4,000 or 5,000. My average Bitcoin price is closer to 4,000. So like I'm entering at the same time. And we all have different fundamental reasons for when we get in, why we get in, our awareness or whatever, but that can totally shift from a buying perspective and what you think is a reasonable buy. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to buy every single dip throughout the year, every time I had the money to be able to do so. And that's why I ended up with the price I had. And other people were essentially selling on the positive momentum at the same exact time. And in 2017, we had this extreme scenario where the awareness and the flood of new entrants to the market just brought constant inflows. So trying to repeat 2017, this is where you can apply a fundamental lens. And Josh writes about the fundamentals in the same thing, like the transaction speeds or the transaction counts on the Bitcoin network is a really good one to be able to capture that. That's a fundamental input that you can use to assist these technical indicators.
Sure. I'll hit on two things. One is like back to the decision tree. So what's the trend? Can it be identified, yes or no? Is it going up or going down? Is it bullish or bearish? Am I buying the dip? Am I selling the pop? If it's in the interim, like we sort of are now, that's where your risk reward is basically highest for either direction because it's flat, essentially. Another thing you can look at is like the curve of the 200 daily moving average. If that is flat, that just says the market is, you know, ranging or not doing anything. If it's at a 45 degree angle, you know, it's telling you things you're already seeing, which is prices just going crazy. So I write for Brave New Coin. I was never good at fundamentals. I felt like I was never good at fundamentals because I never felt like I could understand crypto as well as like Andreas could. But in the end, anybody can look at any of these metrics and make decisions based on those metrics. So things I like to look at are on-chain transaction count over time. Basically, who's using the network when, how are the transaction fees when those transactions are being used? So if we talk about Ethereum, recently its transaction fees have gone up extremely high on very little actual transactions. So Ethereum behaves a little differently than Bitcoin. Bitcoin, the transaction fees are more so tied to transaction volume. Something else I like to look at is network NVT, network value to transaction ratio. You don't have to be like bought into all this stuff to just like look at it and say, you know, what's going on here. Basically, is the economic value being transferred on chain more now than it was in December or less?
And these ideas for fundamental indicators that are going to affect technical pricing are, it's an emerging concept of saying what is important to the network.
Sure.
Which in traditional markets, you know, oil could move based on inventory, or a stock like Facebook could drop 20% because their growth projection was lower because of their earnings call. And that doesn't necessarily mean they didn't make a lot of money. It just means they don't think that they're going to grow quite as fast in the future. So other markets have non-technical things, but they can also sort of be seen on technical on charts. So like how far have we gone from the mean? So you want to discuss how you look at some of that?
Sure. So like if we're going back to December 2017 again, I think it's up there. If you're looking at like the daily 200 moving average, you can see that price is getting farther and farther and farther and farther away from that line. So when this is happening in my head, I'm thinking the probability of us going higher gets lower and lower the farther away we get from the mean of the year's trading, basically. So the risk reward for long, you know, buying sort of gets reduced because the upside theoretically is less. So that should affect your trading decisions. You know, are you buying or selling? Are you buying or selling Ripple at $3 when it's way above the 200 daily moving?
When it broke out of its trend, Ripple, for example, and I want to get into alts.
Yeah.
But Ripple broke out of its trend at around 25 cents. But you still had people like learning about Ripple and having all these ideas about this altcoin. And they may be fundamentally flawed from whatever their ideas for why something is good buy. But more importantly than that, they're buying something at $3 a month after it was a quarter. Like, could you imagine buying a house for $1 million when a month ago it was $100,000? And you would say, you're insane, go away. But what we had was millions and millions of people buying heavily into huge uptrends like that. And we had these blow off tops where the market eventually, because markets are smart, eventually realized this is unsustainable, we have to fix it. And that's a great example from an altcoin perspective, but Bitcoin as well, once you hit 19,000, it just needed to cool off. And now you have this prolonged period of repricing the market and finding what's our new floor, whether that's 6K or whether that's 3K or whatever people's different predictions are, we're now consolidating and looking for that floor.
Sure. And I always like to bring up market participants because the people are literally entering crypto for the first time in 2017 and 2018, buying Ripple, whatever. And the people who are entering in 2017 might not be the people who are in since 2011. You know, the people in, since 2011 might like be true believers in everything, and we're going to change the world. We're going to flip in the fiat currency, this filthy fiat, blah blah blah, and that's fine. But what I like to think is, how is their mindset of buying and selling changing based on when they actually got into crypto? People who got in since 2017. Might not be the type of person who wants to hold through all this volatility. The HODL meme, they might not want to HODL through all this volatility like the people in 2013 have, for instance, which is fine. It's their right to do so. But you have to think about that, especially with altcoins or ICOs, what I'm seeing, which is basically buy the presale, sell the listing, forget about it. Any ICO, I'm bearish on ICOs in general, but any ICO that doesn't do anything or has a product before it even, if it doesn't have a product when it launches, you know, that I have no baseline for anything there.
Yeah, so it's trading on an exchange, but it could be difficult to try to value with some of these same ideas what we were talking about, the Bitcoin network. They don't have a network, so how can you say how many transactions they have on the network or what the usage of the product is? If they don't have the product, it's speculation on the asset. And oftentimes, especially with an ICO, what you were seeing was people with a sweetheart deal on the front end. So maybe they bought for a quarter per token, and then there was a public sale that might, for some examples, some of my favorite examples like Salt, the public sale was more like $2, $3, $4 a token. So the people that bought for a quarter already had like a 10x plus on their investment from a US dollar standpoint, and then it goes on exchange and it hits like $15, and they're selling into that. Like, no one in their right mind is not taking some profits at that point. So you have to ask, who am I buying from? And once it receives that liquidity of being on the exchange, you have early buyers that are distributing into that. They're selling into that strength. So who here could not register on Bittrex, Binance, Cryptopia, some altcoin exchange at some point last year? Do y'all remember that? Did anybody struggle with that, being able to get an account? That was a sign that there was an enormous rush of people into the altcoin markets. And there is a correlation of Bitcoin and altcoins, because most of these, y'all may know, you actually buy with Bitcoin. So there's this idea of correlation between altcoins. And I'd like to ask Josh to give us a description of looking at an altcoin. We can use Ripple as our example, from a US dollar basis versus a Bitcoin basis, and how you may actually trade those differently. And that, how that translates down to the lower caps too, because Ripple's obviously a mega cap.
Sure. So in general, how it's worked so far is Bitcoin moves the altcoin to Bitcoin pairs generally fall off because they don't follow the Bitcoin move immediately. Then Bitcoin consolidates or goes sideways, and then the alts move a little bit. Typically, you don't see like alts leading anything.
So a rising tide, but an inverse correlation in 2017 was pretty...
Inverse or delayed, yeah.
Yeah, a delayed correlation.
And we're
a lagging indicator.
Yeah, and we're starting to see
that... Bitcoin was the leading indicator for alts.
And we're starting to see that again with... if you look at Bitcoin pairs versus USD pairs, you know, the alts, anything that's not Bitcoin is an alt for me. They're basically sideways on the USD price, right? They're ranging, they're going up and down. You know, Ethereum was 440, 480, 490, whatever it is. versus Bitcoin, which is had this massive upswing recently with no with relatively little follow through with the alts. But what I'm seeing in most of these alts is what I saw before the Bitcoin swing up recently, which is that they're very far from their mean on the high time frames. So statistically, based on mean reversion solely, they should follow through in short order pretty soon.
Unless there's a fundamental impetus for why they don't.
Sure.
Which is always a risk. So one of the things I like to say is I'm a technical trader as well. However, personally, if anyone's aware, is anybody aware of the term bag holding? You're probably doing it if you are in crypto right now and bought them more than a week or two ago. So if you're going to bag hold something, meaning you're going to continue to hold something on spot, you purchased it off an exchange and you're going to hold it for a period of time at a loss, I want to do that with something I'm fundamentally confident in. If I'm doing that with something I hate, I'm going to be real sad about it. Versus if I'm comfortable relatively with my average price, if I want, my strategy could be to average down over time if it goes below what I want and I'm applying a long-term lens. So I like to fundamentally screen projects I believe in for certain reasons and then choose entries and exits based on the technical indicators, or whereas Josh may be willing to trade something that I don't want to touch with a 10-foot pole because I don't believe in its fundamentals.
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways, though. There's certain things you touched on. I was like, so I'm like a Bitcoin maximalist who masquerades as like a profit maximalist.
Yeah,
I'll trade anything with a chart that has enough liquidity, as anybody who's like a trader, the trader's trader would. You know, they'll trade anything they can understand and has liquidity.
Liquidity being the ability to actually buy and sell something. It's on an exchange and there's volume for whatever your size is. So most altcoins, if you're on a prominent exchange, if you're going on and you're buying a couple $1,000 worth, you can buy into that without affecting the price. But if you're a hedge fund and you're looking for a long-term position in EOS because you think it's going to kill Ethereum, it may take you quite a while, or you go through an over-the-counter trading desk or something to buy your multi-million dollar position, because if you just went on Binance and bought EOS with $5 million, it would affect the price.
Let's take a quick break to thank The Ocean for being a Ledger Status partner and for sponsoring LedgerCast. Go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean right now. You can check out the app in beta if you've already registered. If you haven't, it's launching live on the 15th. That may be by the time you're listening to this. You can go in and trade from wallet to wallet. They never take custody of your tokens. They have several pairs at the ready already. You can trade ZRX. You can trade Maker, BAT, Request Network, Mana, Status Network, District 0x, DNT. And Ethereum as well. They've got pairings with the Maker token and then also the TrueUSD token for stable coins. The platform's really great. I've been beta testing it. I think that you will love it. Check out The Ocean. It's an exciting time for them launching their project. I can't wait to see what you think about it if you do some trades and check out their liquidity pool that they have available on every single pair so that you can make your orders and enjoy all of the benefits of what centralized exchanges have often with liquidity and a great interface and speed. But this is wallet to wallet. You never hand over your tokens. You trade right from your Ledger or MetaMask or something like that. Check it out today. Go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean. And thanks so much to The Ocean for being a Ledger Status partner. And congratulations to them on launching the app.
Let's talk about EOS for a second, because EOS was made a big splash here last year when I was here, interestingly. How things have changed in a year. EOS is kind of a project that scared me from a fundamental perspective. Any ICO that's promising things that sound too good to be true, you know, I mean, everyone's a smart investor who just sort of ignores certain things sometimes. So you got to be careful when ICOs are pitching you things, obviously to sell tokens or to sell whatever. But until they prove it, you know, until it's on mainnet and there's transactions, if we look at EOS now, it's got virtually no transactions whatsoever. You know, it's still early, but, you know, they're promising, what, 10,000 per second or something.
Yeah, but we're, so there's this idea that we're building the infrastructure right now in crypto, and the dApps will come. And what we have now is some of these are starting to launch, and the question is, where are the dApps? So what you're seeing is a lot, EOS included, they're launching funds where they're going to go give people grants. So they go give them money to, say, build a dApp on our network. So as you start seeing these networks being used, they may increase their fundamental basis. But otherwise, you built the highway and there's no cars coming down the road. So it makes it much harder to price effectively. That said, you can totally trade EOS. In fact, I made fun of EOS last year at the absolute bottom because I was like, that year-long ICO is going great because it was just, it was already on exchange. So people were trying to figure out how to price this, and they had the strategy of a year-long ICO, and like it was just trading and trading and trading down, down, down relative to Bitcoin. And right when I made fun of it, and you can usually do counter trade your own like
emotions
and psychology. Right when I like was like, this is hilarious how much it's dumped, total bottom, 10x off that. Now, I wasn't in that trade at the time, but it was like a perfect signal to myself to say there's a technical basis here, but there's also an emotional basis. Because like I said earlier, these charts are psychology put on your screen and on the chart and in the candles.
But that's such a struggle for me because I think everything is just garbage.
Yeah. You know? And I think Josh's perspective is probably the better one. Being skeptical is probably the good thing. I've heard, I think it's a Jesse Livermore quote, who's like this epic trader. Roughly the idea is that you should be terrified of losing money and hopeful of gaining money, but you don't want to give people your money. So if you've got $1,000, you don't want someone else to take 800 of that because you took an 80% drawdown on that purchase. Instead, oftentimes, and then myself included, especially after you see a market 20x, 100x, something like that, I'm terrified sometimes of missing the big gain, and in doing so, I'm not terrified enough of the downside, and therefore you give yourself too long of a leash on the loss, and you are unwilling to cut it when the idea is invalid.
Yeah, and skipping around a bit, but if we go back to like Ripple, you know, I was hearing two things last year with Ripple. I was hearing people like bouncers in LA, people in Texas, people in London, you know, my bartender, my Lyft driver is asking me about XRP. How do I buy XRP? Like, I don't agree with anything to do with XRP from a fundamental network perspective. But when I'm hearing that coupled with what I'm seeing on the chart, which was year-long consolidation where the price just went sideways, that was coming to an end based on technicals. And I was thinking, okay, something's maybe going to happen here where there's new market participants, new money coming in, new money that can't get in, going back to your people basically banging at the doors of Bittrex and Binance and whatever.
These are what we would call top things. So like signs outside of the chart that coincide with the chart that something feels close. So I have an example. My 92-year-old grandmother has owned, I think, Exxon. It was one of her larger holdings, and she loves to write down the price of Exxon every day. She probably has notebooks with 50 years worth of Exxon prices. And she watches CNBC, and I saw her at Christmas last year, and she asked me about Bitcoin. And I should have just gone and sold everything on January 1st, not December 31st, for tax reasons. But things like that, like talking about it in NFL locker rooms, other stuff like that, that can confirm what you're seeing on the chart where we're so far from the mean. The price is so far from that daily moving average. Those give you hints and signals so that you can use these things together to make better trades to try to capture a larger percentage of the trend.
Sure. And even with Ethereum last year, we were seeing the same thing. Long-term consolidation, sideways in price. And what happened? We got the ICO mania explosion that really boosted that. You know, would it have happened? Would price action have happened the same way without ICOs? Probably not. based on technicals, the technicals would say, yeah, it would have, because that's just where things were headed. So I don't know how to like bring those two things together in my head, because I want to be the technical guy. So the question now becomes, are we going to see that same explosion based on technicals with Ethereum without the ICO mania? Maybe it's security tokens that happen next that fuel Ethereum. I'm doubtful, but.
And oftentimes you'll wait for the next big move, but it may actually take longer to go through this consolidation phase than you expect. A traditional market that's a fun one to point at is like silver and gold. And you know, it has this huge, huge boom, if you're familiar with those cycles. And then it just consolidates for years. And there's this idea of implied future volatility through something like Bollinger Bands, if y'all are familiar with that as an indicator. And this is an indicator that you can apply on a chart. We'd love to teach you more about TA. It just can't do it in a session like this. But if you either follow us, read our stuff, that kind of thing, we'll dive into more of that. But from a Bollinger Bands perspective, can you give an idea of, like, it gives us signals for when we might see that future volatility, meaning potential up move or down move?
Sure. So Bollinger Bands are just like standard deviations from price. So if price is sideways, the bands actually get really, really tight. And when price moves above or below those bands, that signals the things are ready to go from that metric. John Bollinger, great guy, by the way.
Crypto trader.
It's funny to see these legacy guys come, like Peter Brandt or, you know, insert name here, and then talk about crypto stuff. It's super weird, like, to learn about Bollinger, to find out that the guy's still alive teaching and then like talking to him on Telegram about like Bitcoin stuff. It's super cool. But yeah, we're talking about silver and Bollinger bands. We were talking about this last night, but time frames, I get this question all the time, like, which time frame do you watch for anything? You know, do you watch the daily? Do you watch the minute? What do you do? In general, you're right. Like for legacy markets, oil for me loves the weekly. Silver loves the monthly. So these, you know, these are time frames you're expecting like things to happen. You know, if you're watching monthly candles, this is going to take maybe 2 years to play out.
So your decision has to be, are you willing to sit in it for those next 2 years and perhaps miss other things? Like if you were in silver for the last 2 years while the equity markets gained 30% plus, you're pretty sad right now about having that much of your portfolio in silver.
Sure. And the same goes with crypto. You know, Bitcoin doesn't like weekly per se. From my perspective, Bitcoin has liked the daily a lot. It's like the 4 hour a lot. It's like the 6 hour a lot. It's like the 12 hour a lot. I think as everything matures, it'll sort of go to the weekly, daily, daily, weekly, monthly timeframes more conclusively than earlier timeframes. But if you're looking at an ICO that just got listed on an exchange, I mean, you have no data technically to look at. So you're forced to use low time frames, which are mainly noise. And just another reason.
It's even more challenging for a technical trader to trade something that's newly listed.
Sure. That doesn't mean you can't glean valuable information from low time frame charts or low time frames in general. I use low time frames all the time. If things are moving fast, if things are volatile, I am on a low time frame. You know, throughout 2017, I was on the 4 hour or lower looking for buying the dip opportunities or whatever, selling the pop, whatever, you know, whatever your strategy is for any of that. But
and the same chart patterns and ideas and price relative to moving average or a blow off top or candle structure, you can apply those on a liquid 1 minute the same way you could apply them to a daily chart. An example of that was last, or maybe it was this, I don't remember when it was. I don't know if, sometimes a coin would go on Binance or Huobi or something like that and just see massive volume in one day. And Storm was one that sticks out in my head. This is no endorsement of Storm, but it got listed somewhere. It was on Binance and it got $2 billion worth of volume for an altcoin in 24 hours. And I was watching it for an entire day on the 1 minute chart, and there's a whole market cycle on the 1 minute chart. And you look at the daily and it's a single ridiculous candle, but you could have traded that on a 1 minute the same way you trade on a daily. And the beauty of the crypto markets is when you do learn, you cut your teeth on how to trade on these lower time frames. We're learning what people trading the NASDAQ learned over the course of 20 or 30 years. We're able to do that in less than a year. So we have an enormous advantage of getting market experience and losing some sleep or whatever else in a much shorter time frame because of the volatility and the length of market cycles in crypto.
Sure. And we're getting close to time. So yeah. let me ask you a question,
okay,
Brian. Do we have an ETF next year? What do you think?
We have an ETF next year.
You think we do?
By the end of 2019?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you think it does anything for price? How are you going to trade that? The news comes out. What are you going to do?
I would be hesitant to trade it on high leverage around the announcement.
Okay.
Certainly in on spot, the closer I hear to those drums beating.
Okay. Do you think that the... So one of the SEC commissioners had a dissenting opinion on the recent... what is it, 96 pages or something?
Yeah.
I haven't yet read it, but her biggest thing was that SEC's decision was beyond its scope, from what I gathered, that denying like the market based on surveillance was a bit too far. I think the Winklevi ETF was getting denied regardless. I think it was just a bad setup. Technically, the specs were bad. You know, it was like end of day auctions. It has no volume already. Like, it was just there are 12 other applications for ETFs. I'm with you.
I think we have custody solutions that are very close that will enable it to happen. And we also have people willing to insure these products on an ETF basis so that it will be possible. And the reason that doesn't necessarily mean I'm like, buy it on that day, even though it went up 50% on the announcement or whatever. But long term, that gives a retail regular investor to put things into crypto on a traditional account. So if you go to your whatever E-Trade or Schwab account, you can buy a Bitcoin ETF. And to me, that's long term bullish because it brings more money into the ecosystem.
Sure. And let's be honest. I mean, most people in their lifetimes currently will never be able to handle a wallet, a crypto wallet. You know, they either don't have time, don't want to be bothered.
In the same way that I can buy a gold ETF, but I don't have a gold bar in my house.
Right. Right? Like handling physical metals just like terrifies me.
Yeah.
Which is the same way many people likely feel about crypto. You know, you're seeing hacks in the news daily. You don't know that, you know, an exchange versus the coin got hacked. You know, most people, if you're here, you're sort of connected, but people hearing this get super fearful of what's going on and don't want to deal with any of that. You know, they'll just leave it on Coinbase or they'll just leave it in the ETF, which is the point of the new market money coming in.
So to finish up, historically, we've been on a long bias. So because of the types of trades that you can make in a stand-up manner, typically all you could do in crypto is buy Bitcoin, buy an altcoin, and have a bullish bias because you don't have a lot of trade opportunities. An ETF is a future trade opportunity, but Josh, can you close us out in terms of what you see in the future of this market in terms of being able to trade both ways and also using various strategies both for Bitcoin and altcoins?
Sure. So I think it's super early. Anybody who tells you otherwise is kidding themselves. I'm not saying this. We didn't even say this, but none of this was investment advice, by the way. if you thought it was, just go ahead and slap yourself in the face because it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, look at the percentage of people who are aware of crypto around the world. It's small. The people who are able to buy around the world, it's small. The amount of people who are able to participate in these financial derivatives, even smaller. So until we see options, until we see long, short, margin, 3X, whatever it is.
Futures available to Americans.
Real futures that don't have these insane, you know, 5 BTC per contract on the CME, things like that. That's what we need to sort of mature and get things fleshed out. Yeah, that'll mean more regulation, and that's like the antithesis of crypto. Crypto doesn't need that to succeed, but it'll happen organically eventually. I mean, if you told me in 2013 that CME futures would have a Bitcoin future, I'd say, like, no, that's insane. What are you talking about? So I think we'll see these things happen organically. We're going to see an Ethereum futures eventually on the CME. I know, I forget his name, but he just came out on Bloomberg yesterday and said, we're not adding any more crypto futures anytime soon. But I think
you should perk your ears up.
I think we'll be surprised whether or not that'll move the needle in any fashion. I don't know immediately, but it's going to happen.
It's what we're doing is we're creating the product suite to be able to trade, and importantly, giving larger investors, so people that are running a family fund or people that are part of a hedge fund or people that are trading on desks at big banks. It gives them a greater suite of tools to be able to trade that is more in line with what they've been able to do in traditional markets. So the average retail investor, you go buy a share of Facebook or Twitter, and you just have a share of Facebook or Twitter. But there's also options, and there's other tools available to people as well. Or there's ETFs, or there's index funds, and there's all this stuff. And we're just getting there with crypto. And right now, our real only way to not be in the market or to short the market in a safe way, and for Americans, whatever, you know, disclosures. the best way to do that is to have cash on the side to be able to buy when your bullish bias can be confirmed. And I would like to note that there's nothing wrong with not being in the trade and equipping yourself to make a trade once it's attractive. And this could be one of those reverse psychology things, like bottoms in, go buy everything right now. Just the same way as, you know, people are saying buy Ripple at $3. This could be the reverse of that. But I think that's an important lesson for all of us as retail traders, to keep cash on the side so that you can buy when it's the right time.
Sure. And if we're talking about the decision tree again, like, am I in capital preservation mode? Am I in be in the market mode? You know, am I in cash? People think I'm crazy when I say this, but being in cash is like being in a 1x short, because you're not... but you're not in anything. So you're basically saying...
You're in inflationary dollars, not anti-inflationary Bitcoin.
Well, you're saying to yourself, I don't think price is going to go higher. I think it's going to go lower. I mean, that's just how I think about it.
Y'all can follow Josh at Carpe Noctum on Twitter. You can read his articles on bravenewcoin.com. You can follow me at Ledger Status on Twitter, and go to ledgerstatus.com to subscribe to the podcast, or just search LedgerCast in your app. I interview people that run projects. I interview traders to get their stories, and I talk to Josh on a regular basis about markets. Thank you all for joining us, and it's been our pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian.
So, what?
Nothing.
So we did a presentation on stage.
Yeah, we did.
We talked about the markets to mostly people that are...
Broad strokes.
Broad strokes, yeah. People that are varying degrees of investor... What would you call that? Confidence?
Market. I like, again, market participants.
They're market participants.
Variable market participants.
Yeah, but from a TA perspective, we try to keep it fairly broad.
How did I not mention cloud the whole time?
There should have been an longer prediction market on whether or not you would have said cloud. I mean, it would have been like 95-5.
It would have been rigged, because I wouldn't have said it anyway, but that's funny that I didn't even mention that.
So let's act like people are now watching the outro.
Okay.
And what would you say, from a follow-up perspective, like, what are next steps, right? So, like, you understand why TA is important. You understand, like...
You don't even need to, like, have the buy-in or believe in it or any of that stuff, but if you're aware of it, I think it affects how you trade, how mm-hmm. you invest. If you look at things from the technical perspective versus, like, just buying regardless of the price... it makes you more of a trader than anything, which some people don't want to be, and that's fine. But I think in the long run, if you stick with it and you know why you're doing what you're doing, you'll start making more money than otherwise, you know?
Okay. I think that's fair.
Now, do you disagree? I mean, some people get stuck in the technical gobbledygook jargon, but...
Yeah, I think...
when I like try to backtest a strategy, uh-huh. it can oftentimes not outperform buying and holding uh-huh. if you bought at the very beginning, right? Like if your initial buy was at the wrong time, then a buy and hold strategy could be really poor. But sometimes even with, say it's like based on some moving average strategy or the cloud and meeting all criteria on the cloud, mm-hmm. to me what that does often is it prevents you from taking the big loss because you're out at the right time. But your time out of the market could be costly on reversals where those are the big gains. So if you calculate everything and you have it a mega run like we had in 2017, for some stuff that could actually be worse performing wise than just buying and holding.
I agree.
So I think that's the fundamentalist's argument. Fundamentalist, fundamental investor.
Right, but that's why, like I said on the stage, like you got to let the runners run sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Take your profit, pick a percentage, 25, 50, whatever percentage.
To counter what I said, because obviously I'm a technical trader.
And then you just let it go.
You're also, when you're backtesting something like that, you're probably backtesting stuff that won, right? Like it's something that from the beginning to now did fairly well because now you're testing it. Like it's in the top 50 market cap and it came from somewhere.
Yeah, but I think people give backtesting too much credit because it's crypto's 24/7. You never know if you're going to be there when you should be as far as the backtest is. Like what, let's say it happened at 4 a.m. and you're not awake. Like is that really a valid system? Like yes, from the technical perspective it is. Like
maybe if it's algorithmic.
Sure. Okay. Let's assume it's all algo driven. That's fine. But the other thing is like your emotions get in the way. Again, if we're excluding algo stuff, if you're hitting that button buy or sell, and you see your system telling you to buy or sell, but you have some other things on your mind and you don't buy or sell, is that your system's fault or is that your fault? You know, how do you, when you're forward testing that, when you're doing it live in the field, you know, mm-hmm. how do you reconcile that?
I don't know that you do. And I agree with you generally that, like, obviously the TA is beneficial for your trading strategy.
Mm-hmm. Like I've always said, I do better when I just pay attention to the chart. And like I said, like if I'm on a desert island, give me the chart. I don't even care.
Yeah. I just believe in this. Sometimes an additional screen, right? Like I want to take in more market information.
Sure, but for me, my additional screen is seeing other people's charts on Twitter, like or other people's charts on Telegram.
But that's still charts,
right? It's still for me. It's
you're
still
a chart maximalist, like you said at the show.
It's not necessarily like news per se, but.
So where would you say someone goes from here, and they're committed, and they're like, I want to understand TA. Is there like a starting point in your opinion for the right stuff to understand versus the wrong stuff to try to start with?
Sure. So everybody needs to get a TradingView account. It's free. I don't work for them. This is unaffiliated completely. But
or you go to ledgerstatus.com/TradingView.
Okay, whatever.
Just kidding.
So do that. And the second thing you should do is go to babypips.com and go through the course. It's free. It'll set you up with some basics. It'll introduce topics and then test you on that from a TA perspective. So it'll teach you about moving averages. It'll teach you about divergences. It's doing it all from a Forex lens, but it's just as applicable to crypto. And I feel like I need to come up with a baby pips for crypto because
that's what ledgerstatus.com/learn is supposed to be.
But me personally.
You personally.
As a competitor.
The Carpe Noctem competition.
Right. Because I do have a chart. I have a massive, massive chart pattern article coming that's completed. We're just trying to figure out how to format it correctly for Brave New Coin. Mm-hmm. And that'll be interesting because the more I've traded, the more I've realized that chart patterns are just like money all the time.
Yeah, and chart patterns are something that if you say like the argument for a manual trade versus a bot, it's mm-hmm. pretty hard to create an algorithm on chart patterns to execute.
Yeah, I've seen bots.
Some are really
that
good.
That do that, though.
They're
like,
smart.
I've seen them.
Pretty smart.
Yeah.
But for your average person, they don't have access to that.
No, and there's a lot of variance with chart patterns, too, especially in crypto compared. Yeah. Like, I think it'd be hard to do an algo for that.
But. Yeah. So I would say, like,
let's say we have some fundamentally sound things according to our screener. So like we're watching 20 coins or something.
Okay.
And based on that, we're now looking for technical entries, technical exits. You would say combine the basics of TA, support, resistance, other things that you learn, match that to chart patterns to be able to execute the decision.
For sure. Like, if I don't know if the trend, what's going on with the trend, look for chart patterns. If volume is descending perfectly day over day over day, there's a chart pattern there.
Okay, so chart pattern versus trend. Let's say you have a bearish chart pattern, bullish trend.
Right. So it's your choice whether to counter trend, counter trade the trend. It's not always smart to do that. Typically, bullish chart patterns are less effective in bearish, clearly bearish markets, which is why it's interesting that the recent inverted head and shoulders actually reached its target as opposed to the other times in the past 6 months where that hasn't been the case. So to me, that's a big signal that things are actually turning a corner here. The other thing is that we didn't dump to 5K on this ETF non-news news. You know, barely moved the needle. Like, yeah, dump 300, 400 bucks, whatever. And that's X percent. But if the news was released like 2 weeks ago, I think it would have been much more bearish in the chart because the market, I think the market mentality has flipped from clearly bearish to like neutral bullish at this point.
Yeah, and that pattern hadn't like set itself up.
Right. Like I imagine if the inverted head and shoulders pattern before it resolved, we got the ETF news, like it just would have shattered everything.
Yeah.
would have shattered Wyckoff. But it didn't. Like it's weird that it lines up like that. Is that a coincidence?
It's also weird that the CME futures contract ended like right after that news.
Yeah. That's why it makes me wonder like why did they release the news yesterday?
Yeah.
Did they have a reason? Like, or is it just random, you know?
Yeah, that's the, our market's manipulated. Is the media used for the purposes of traders that need their biz to fill?
Yeah, I mean, because they could have really easily had, I'm sure they had this lined up like earlier in the week, you know?
Yeah. Like, are you a conspiracy theorist about that type of stuff?
Not really, but it's just like weird that it happened after we broke up, you know? It didn't happen when we were at 5K or whatever.
Yeah, so the Bitcoin price dumped last night, which we talked about during the episode, and then it started reversing in a big way after futures closed while we were on stage. And the timing of that was suspicious based on...
It's by the minute. I mean, literally like slow bleed and then massive reversals as soon as futures closed.
Yeah. So you got an article coming out for people that want to learn more from you.
Yeah.
I've got some stuff that
hopefully it'll be out by the time this goes live.
I've got a lot of stuff that I'm working on, and to put that in perspective, it's not just like here's how you do TA for crypto. It's more like a fully featured creating strategy and an investment thesis in crypto education around how do you get to that screen of like here's projects worth investing in? Like, how do you keep the Trons and the IOTAs and whatnot?
How do I buy before the Binance listing?
Yeah, I don't know that that's.
That's what I'm going to teach you on my secret private Telegram group.
Yeah, but there are a ton of free resources, including all your Brave New Coin articles.
Yeah.
Anytime I interview a trader or we have like a market analysis episode. Like, I would just encourage people to absorb as much of that type of stuff as possible.
For sure. Even if you, like, again, you don't have to agree with all of it. You don't have to even understand all of it.
You can think it's terrible or you could not understand it. But over time, you absorb enough information over and over again and things start to click for you. And you mix in trading and practice. And that's why I brought up during our talk that I thought that it's important and a great benefit that in crypto, these massive market cycles can occur over the course of a year. That in traditional markets, like your entire investment life could be a single or maybe two market cycles. So we have a great benefit. There's a lot of opportunity.
For sure.
So if somebody's in the dumps, they're like, I got to learn this stuff.
It's trading at the speed of light.
It's trading at the speed of crypto.
And learning, you know, learning how to trade in the bear market's like learning how to drive in the snow. You know? Especially when you can only long most of this stuff.
Yeah. That's how you earned your stripes.
That's how I both learned how to drive and learned how to trade.
Nice. Being Being a northerner.
Yeah.
A Michigander.
From the Middle West, yeah.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of snow in Birmingham.
No, I bet not, yeah.
Anyway, it was fun to hang out with you this week and enjoyed the thing and whatnot. So I thought we'd just do a little
Blockchain DC hashtag. Thanks, Brett.
Yeah, thanks.
Whoever else.
Blockchain DC for having us. We appreciate the stage and whatnot.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll catch y'all next time.
Thanks.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards,